Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello. Hope you've all had a lovely start to the new year. We are on our usual holiday break, but we just wanted to give you something putrid and disgusting to smack your gums on this week. So we've uploaded this preview of our behind-the-scenes discussion of the Season 8 premiere, Vermis. Now, if you enjoy, you can find the rest of the 45-minute discussion on Patreon, where we've also got bonus episodes, the first edition of the Wrong Station lore book, and our Grimoire Club. There's already 3 episodes of that, and this month we'll be discussing the Screwfly Solution. Of course, if you just want to dip your toe in all this, you can also sign up for a free trial for 1 week. Neat. But in any case, whatever you do, stay warm, stay scared, and enjoy.
Bum bum bum.
Oh, Zoom thinks I'm playing music. That was I hit those notes.
What a compliment.
Damn.
Totally deserved.
Audio in audio settings. Ooh. Welcome to the first control tower of the season and our first control tower of a Halloween episode. Thus why I gave you the toccata and fugue in D minor. Today, we're talking about Vermis, written by Alexander Saxton. I did describe this continually. I described this to, you know, people. Just like, hey, what are you working on? Oh, just the most awful, vile thing we've ever written.
The most vile, awful thing we've written
so far.
That's how I pitched it. That's why I pitched it to Rachel. I was like, Rachel, I want you to, I've got an episode for you, but it is the most disgusting thing Alexander's ever written. I just want to give you a warning.
Walk me through that conversation. Walk me through, how did this go?
Okay. Rachel, would you like to do an episode of Wrong Station? Oh, yes, of course. But I have just one thing. Yes. It is the most disgusting thing Alexander has ever written. Oh, well, I'll have to read it at least.
And now the big reveal. Who is Rachel to Alexander?
Rachel is my cousin. I see her at family dinners.
Not no more.
I haven't seen her since she recorded this episode. I don't know where we stand right now.
Oh, she had a blast doing that. Also, let me just to clarify,
it sounds like she did. Like, that comes across.
Yeah, it sounds great. Yeah.
She's clearly having a good time.
This is a funny coincidence, just to make clear that, like, you know, Rachel is Alexander's cousin, but also coincidentally has also been a very good friend of mine for 10 years that, you know, we met doing theater stuff. So it's the double connection.
You know, Anthony, you've ruined a great friendship. I've ruined my whole family. It's a momentous episode.
She had a great time. I wish she could have joined us this morning. She's in a class.
Yeah, she had a great time. Wonderful. because
it's a kick-ass story
were sitting,
that fucking rocks.
Well, she knew that you were sitting right there, and after reading a story like that, you gotta play nice. You don't know what the person's capable of.
That's true. I could be full of worms.
She's like, yeah, what if you fill her up with worms? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I remember when you handed in like the first draft of this, Alexander, and you were like, is this too much? And like, I don't know, maybe I have like maybe it's my science background or something, but I was like, no, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's like, you can go harder if you wanted. Like I did say it was the grossest thing we'd ever written, but I wasn't looking at it through my eyes. I was looking at it through the eyes of like what I knew everyone else would think.
Uh-huh.
For me, like, you and I have had this joke since you came started writing this, which is like, they're just little worms.
They're just little guys.
They're just little worms.
Mm-hmm. Some of them look so little.
Some just little
they're not so little. They're just worms, though.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Sometimes a guy is just full of worms.
It happens.
And sometimes they get into his brain and they make him write a story. about how great it is to be full of worms and how everyone should do it.
I mean,
it's less a story than a persuasive essay, I think.
I think it's very persuasive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to, otherwise I'm going to get wormed.
You have to. You must.
Well, this is where we should get into the, let's get to the meat of it, Alexander.
Yeah,
what is this about? Why did you write the fucked up thing, as we like to start all Control Towers by saying?
So a couple of years ago, in the depths of a depression, I went for a walk and I came up with an idea for a story that felt incredibly, that was horrible. It was the worst thing I'd ever written. And I really felt like it captured the mood and the experience of what I was going through at the time, and also what I felt a lot of other people were going through at the time. And I was extremely proud of it. And that story was called Do You Need?
Mm-hmm.
And after that story, I really felt like I felt the pride of having built like a little machine, you know,
mm-hmm.
like having built a little machine that does something that no other little machine you've ever seen has done. And it does it really well. And I was very proud of it. And then I thought, well, let's really open this fucker up and see what it can do. let's give it some juice and see what can happen. So, you know, part of it was I felt like I'd struck on a rich vein, a rich creative vein with Do You Need? Do You Need? And I wanted to follow that some more. Part of it was, you know, I just in the course of my procrastination spent a lot of time reading about Ascaris worms, which just, you know, like there were a couple of pictures that I saw in articles about these worms that just struck such a visceral chord. And whenever I see something or feel something like that, it feels like something I just have to explore and really get into what that feeling of revulsion is about and explore it.
Honestly is barely a hop and a step from the Dr. Pimple Popper and the, you know, like the shaving a cow's hoof to get like the shit out.
I've never seen those videos.
It's really not that odd. It's really not that strange.
Okay. Well, I got the pimple popping thing. That's something to explore.
Not my jam.
The hoof thing actually is like one of the few things that makes me go, ugh.
The hoof thing. Now that sounds rich. That sounds rife.
Well, it's what you were saying, the shaving the hoof.
Shaving the hoof.
Just like imagine what you could find in there, what we as writers could put in there.
Put in a hoof?
Shave the metaphor.
Put in that little hoof cavity.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the possibilities.
Well, here's an idea. Not hoofs, no more. You replace the hoof with molars.
All
like
right.
Each hoof is one big molar, like a tooth.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
It's like how hoofs are technically toenails.
Yeah.
Just take that exactly. One step forward. It's teeth.
Now they're teeth. Now. Make it comedy. Teeth. Make it comedy. Put that horse on a marble floor.
Uh-huh.
He's not going anywhere.
And the horse is
too slippery. It's too slippery. The horse is, yeah, there you go.
I've never seen one with a horse. It's always been a cow.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, I've seen like a horse. You've never seen like when the hoof comes off and there's
where
like
it sort of peels
all the shit inside the hoof.
Anyway,
that's the one of the few things that gets me.
Anyway, other things in the air. Jacob had written this very brilliant pilot for a TV show, which will someday get made and make him fabulously rich. And hopefully get a few, you know, filthy farthings tossed my way in the form of writing contracts. But the pilot of the show focuses on neglected tropical diseases, of which Ascariasis is one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that gave me an important thing for the story to be about. And then it's in its own way, it's a sort of inversion of Do You Need? Because Do You Need is... it's sort of a story about radicalization and about the circumstances under which people get themselves radicalized in online communities. And this story is sort of the inversion of that. It's about the radicalism of the status quo, and about about the insanity of established people and institutions and the way things are, and how, you know, how there's this sort of knife's edge difference between things that are the most fringe and the most outre, and things that are established norms and institutions that we all accept. I think, you know, before this call, we were talking about the absolutely insane Zionist militia Lehi, which, you know, was arrested early on in the foundation of Israel for being actual terrorists, and then later were like incorporated into the IDF, and like 2 decades later they had a president elected, and these were like Zionists who wanted to ally with Hitler in the 40s, like crazy people. That's just top of mind because we were talking about it right before the call, but just the idea that ensconced within the very legitimate, very genteel institutions and people that rule society is this fucking craziness, is this deep well of madness that mm-hmm. is separated from the things that we fear and revile only by a cordon of money and prestige. And so that was another reason why I wanted to write this. I wrote the first draft before I had ever read anything by J.G. Ballard. And then I remember I was reading the Atrocity Exposition while I was getting ready to work on a second draft of this. And I realized, oh, no, I can take this further. There's so much more I could do. I could really open this up. I could really let this thing breathe. I could really put some oxygen into this engine and see how fast it can go. And so I really loved writing this story because I found it incredibly liberating to be able to do.
Mm.
I found it was a way for me to be really honest about the class atmosphere that I've grown up in as well, or grown up on the edges of. It's a story that is about Toronto waspdom in a way that stories we've had before haven't been. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a pretty frank and true story about the reality of that. So that's where this came from. Those are some of the strands that were on my mind when Vermis came together.
I think something that fascinates me. Well, first of all, I wanted to say I didn't realize that my script had something to do with this.
Oh yeah,
I had no idea. Oh, definitely. I love that. And now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, part of that script is about a neglected tropical disease making its way into a like pretty ordinary Canadian community, mm-hmm. and sort of about the complete lack of preparation and you know the strangeness of it, mm-hmm. and I actually do see how some of those themes. And it's so funny because that influenced this story. Your story is now currently influencing me on writing what I am hoping to be my ultra disgusting Vermis-esque piece that makes everybody uncomfortable and leads to a bunch of hilarious messages mm-hmm. Through our various social media channels. But what I find really interesting when I first read this story and now listened to the story and saw the changes you made from the first to second draft, I was also struck by the aspect of hypocrisy,
mm-hmm.
and the idea that like to live with hypocrisy. A hypocrisy that's so blatant and obvious and huge, to both have worms and to deny that you have worms at the exact same time, is basically just madness.
Mm-hmm.
And how common that is,
mm-hmm.
in our world, like not worms specifically, but you know, worm-like things.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you could, you know, to use the most obvious example, since this is kind of what the whole story is about. Or not what it's about, but it's a theme in the story. The people who claim to be pro-life and support, like, you know, anti-choice legislation,
mm-hmm.
and then also, like, also support the bombing of countries that they've never visited, or mm-hmm. the, like, eradication of the poor through, you know, ridiculous social policy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, those people come across as insane.
Mm-hmm.
When they talk, because they have to truly believe that the human body cannot hold on to hypocrisy for that long, mm-hmm. without becoming like deranged.
Yeah.
Like, because everybody always says, like, oh, well, you know, they say don't smoke, but I smoke. I'm a hypocrite. But it's like the deeper hypocrisies, like, I think genuinely will make you go insane if you let them sit in your body too long. It's like radiation poisoning.
Yeah, the existential hypocrisies.
Yeah, well, your brain will, it'll adapt to make that make sense, however it has to.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like being Dutch and Portuguese at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was also
a thing none of you heard.
This was also pre-episode.
That was a pre-episode
fucking,
riff.
Fucking Spinoza.
Yeah.
Pick one, you
pick
son
a
of a bitch.
He's the only person who ever was both Dutch and Portuguese, and it destroyed his mind. And that's
it destroyed
why,
his mind.
That's why, you know, that's why he did philosophy.
Yeah. He was a man of many many hypocrisies. He was a lens grinder and a philosopher.
The, my God.
Pick one.
What a pervert. What a depraved human being.
And those two communities, they're on site. Like, you a lens grinder, you walk into the philosopher
into
quarter
the philosopher's
town,
district. Yeah.
Oh, you're getting fucking beamed.
Yep.
You're getting hit by a blackjack. Your family's gonna find you with a Colombian necktie. Or should I say a philosopher's necktie?
I think that's a bow tie.
It's a bow, yeah. And leather patches on your tweed. It's human leather. That riff didn't work, but it's okay.
The lens grinders district, the danger zone. They're known to put a bullet in a stranger's dome.
Do not go there. Do not go to that part of town. That is where the lens grinders do their grinding.
Do their horrible grinding. Anyway, the Dutch, the Portuguese, the lens grinders, the philosophers.
Mm-hmm. We could go on, but we won't.
The worm havers and the worm wanters.
Yeah.
So what else were you like? This is, I mean, I
Alexander, I think Vermis was a much better title than Apocalypse Worm, which was your working title on draft one.
Was it?
Is that real?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, damn it. That would have been, I bought that. I bought that immediately.
Man, I bought that. And I was like, is that something? I guess it sounds like something I might have written.
It does sound like
very
something
stupid, but
I think we've just did a self-fulfilling prophecy that there will one day be a story called Apocalypse Worm.
Vermis,
isn't that
2.
A magic card? I think that's a magic card.
It feels Apocalypse it's Worm. Yeah, Apocalypse Worm is a magic card. W-U-R-M.
Okay.
Oh,
I'm looking it up.
Maybe.
Is that like a 13 drop or something?
No, I'm also thinking of The Critic and Apocalypse. Wow.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Before, and then we'll get into the full questions.
Okay.
My question for you is, what changed between? So I feel like a lot of what was talked about in the episode is the same from first to second draft. Like, I think your themes are very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
What changed from the first to second draft when you were sort of just adjusting, tweaking the knobs, like changing things? Because I looked back at the first draft and like, oh, these are quite large changes. Like, we kind of had a classic Wrong Station ending for the first draft, if you remember.
Right. I mean, the classic Wrong Station ending, I think it just didn't turn the screw enough. And it needed to be something that, in order to, for the story to feel like it had real stakes, it felt like it needed to be more than just the story of this one woman's decline. And it needed to have a broader significance. And in the first draft, I don't think I had it expanding outward enough in a way that I did in the second draft. And I think one of the things that I loved about the version of the story at the end is the way in which her thing proves contagious, not just in a physical sense, but in an ideological sense. Like the whole image of her daughter walking down the street in the bright dress at the end of the story is one that captured the idea that I wanted, which is that this isn't just a fucked up person. This is something that people in her situation are really susceptible to. And I wanted to show that the spontaneously generating disease was inside everyone in that world. Part of what changed was I think I made it grosser. Well, I think maybe the ideas in the first draft were as gross, but I think I became more gross in the writing as a result of reading some Ballard and really realizing that I could be pushing things a lot further than I was, and I could be a lot more daring in what I was doing and how I was describing the world. So I think that the style of the story changed a lot because of that influence. About Crash, Ballard said that he wanted to rub the human face in its own garbage. And that's not something I wanted to do, because, you know, I think I have a much more optimistic opinion of the human race than he did. For me, this was about like the neighborhoods and people and community that I grew up in and around. I wanted to rub their face in garbage because there are people who I think need to have their face in garbage. And the aspects of myself, more I think maybe more important to me as a writer, the aspects of myself that are of that community and of that world. So part of writing this story was rubbing those parts of myself, the Dutch aspects of myself, if you will, in that garbage, as you know, as a way of changing myself. And yeah, so the seeing the worms spread at the end of the second draft felt like a more meaningful way for the story go than it had originally gone. And it also felt like a more true way for things to go, because I think it's a more accurate depiction of how the kinds of ideas for which the worms are metaphorical spread and metastasize among elite communities.
Kind of reminds me of the way that disease has been contextualized in other parts of the world and in other eras, where, you know, tuberculosis became this, you know, this romantics disease. And in part, that's because, you know, rich people basically decided to fetishize it, this thing that killed them and killed the artists that they cared about. And they were like, well, if we're going to have this illness, if we're going to have to live with this illness, we better make it fashionable, I guess. And it's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's a bacteria that kills people.
Shades of Brandon Cronenberg's Antiviral.
Yeah, exactly. And to sort of to try and, you know, take this disease and attach all these cultural and positive signifiers to it just because you can't live with the idea that you're sick, it feels very vermicy.
Anyway, let's move on.
Let's do some of
these listener questions. All right, let's do some fortified against the criticism.
Let's do it.
Let's start with a selection of the.